and then there's War Boss, and then there's Farseer, and then there's Space Skeleton, and Bug.
That's amazing.
And Fish.
That's-
yep.
To forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined today by Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Man, how about that last episode?
Oh man, I was a salty boy when you, when I wasn't included in the interview. And I'm like, yeah, I would have contributed absolutely nothing. Just stand back and let the great man roll.
Next time, maybe we can get him to come on again. Next time. Oh, well, welcome to anyone who is just joining us or joining us from last week or returning. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I mean, this is kind of like a slow 40K week, but there's been a lot that's been mentioned in our, like, from Games Workshop and our community and everything just in the last few days. So, for sure.
Yeah, and G-Dub's pumping. Then they might be slow on the 40K front, but AOS, Warcry. What was the other one? It's Cursed City just got announced.
Cursed City. Yep.
Oh. The aesthetic of those models is very exciting.
It is.
A whole new horizon.
I love it. I mean, you know, no secret that I liked the Silver Tower and Blackstone Fortress. And I like those games because they're just really good ways for you to expose people who they may not give a hill of beans about our large scale 40K. But the models are very captivating and cool. And you can sit down and have an evening of kind of engagement, which is, I think, like the true definition of entertainment.
Well, and you can get the app and it has a whole bunch of characters outside of just the characters that are in the game itself. And so, like, you can run like Silver Tower with a bunch of Khorne characters. It's like awesome.
Oh, yeah, like that's pretty mini role playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So we saw spoilers for anyone who's reading the Martius Kalgar comics, but by the time you've heard this, you've probably seen the picture. So spoiler warning.
The picture.
Yep. If you don't want any spoilers at all, skip forward about 2 minutes, maybe three minutes. We'll try to wrap it up in then. But spoiler. So Martius rips the head off Lord of Skulls.
And everyone's losing their minds.
I mean, isn't that kind of fair?
I could see how, okay, this is what I like, is that we can either, like, it's either doesn't phase us, or we're offended because we don't like the Ultramarines, or we do like Lord of Skulls.
But I only like it that it's too good a representation of what actually happens in the game at the moment, and people are unhappy.
That's what I was going to bring up, is that don't we kit out our captains to go to and smash, beat down Lords of War? Yeah.
But, okay, come on, guys. Can Martius do it?
Depends how well he rolls four up invulnerable saves.
What you've seen is right off to the side of that is, you know, Tigerius has buffed him up.
I was going to say, where's the apothecary? That's how we know it's the real game.
Yeah, that's right.
Or, I mean, this also plays into my talk last time. I mean, the other 10 Ultramarine captains are around somewhere.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They're all hyping him up, cheer-squadding him.
So one of the neatest things about 40K, though, is that we create these heroes, or the world, the lore creates these heroes, and then they throw them into impossible odds. I mean, like, for a longest time, characters would go, and if they beat down an avatar, you knew they were, you know, really cool.
Yeah.
Like, full group.
The avatar was the measuring stick. Yeah. If you could beat an avatar, you were legit.
Yeah. So this is stuff. I mean, it's just, and again, we kind of talked about it on the last show, there's nothing's too big for 40K. Heck, that thing could just be parked. And there could be some grots hiding in there about to convert it to an orc thing.
I was about to say, we haven't seen the rest of the panel. It could already be like off the tracks, lying on its side in a scrap heap, and he's just making an example of something that's already wrecked. Or yeah,
I would say, but I don't mind it. In the confines of a comic, I'm cool with it.
When given the chance to jump to a conclusion, there's a lot of jumping.
Yeah. Oh, come on. We're playing about space soldiers. And really, the long and the short of it is nothing that, like, these things don't affect your enjoyment of moving around your plastic toy soldiers.
So absolutely not.
It's fine.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, the suspension of disbelief should have ended a long time ago when you pick up a Martius Kalgar, when you pick up a 40K comic book. It should be a long about the door. You should have left it at the door upon purchase.
And to be fair, as a true adherent to Khorne, I mean, was blood spilled? Check.
Yeah, winning.
Did someone lose their head? Check. Kind of just checked all the boxes right there.
So everybody's happy. So if we, staying true to the 2-minute spoiler warning, we got to change topics for us here. But speaking of crossovers, we also saw announced today that Games Workshop, Warhammer 40K, I don't know if it's work, but Lord of the Rings, to be doing a crossover with Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, that is actually quite exciting. Do you guys know of many 40K players who haven't played Magic at some point? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely, well, I mean, Magic's one of those things, just like 40K. I mean, I know 40K has definitely been around longer than Magic, but I mean, Magic is just one of those pervasive hobbies as well, you know, in the tabletop stuff, that it's definitely out there. And I mean, have you played Magic, Paul?
Oh, yeah. No, Magic is a phenom, right? I mean, people,
yeah.
It's one of those, I mean, like 40K, it now has the history behind it, to where there's this punk band that I like. And one of their albums is, I think my older brother used to listen to Lagwagon.
Okay.
But it's like that. We've either done it, we dabbled in it for a while, and we've quit and come back to it, or we know somebody who has, or our older sibling has done 40K or Magic and that kind of stuff.
Sure. Adam, have you played Magic?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. It's like at some point we picked it up, right? I admit I haven't played it anytime recently. I mean, you know, you got 40K, you got all this other stuff going on. There's quite a bit, but you tell me that I could make a commander deck with a 40K commander and a bunch of 40K cards. I mean, I might go back to it.
But people have an opinion about this, though. And
I
can't tell them that they're wrong. I mean, there are certain things that, like, Magic has. Now, the lore is expansive because they do these planes, and so the style and the theme and the characters, they can change. But, you know, there is this backdrop. There's a narrative behind the game. I don't think it's as deep and as rich as Warhammer 40K, but it exists. And people,
or as coherent.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because, you know, they've done the same thing. They've kind of patched things together over time.
Yeah.
They did a thing, a crossover with The Walking Dead, and with unique effects on cards. And, of course, rules about how you can use those cards. And now this is, I don't know if this is this the second time, but it's certainly rare that they're doing another crossover with another property that people are incredibly passionate about. And it's going to introduce some unique effects in the cards. So they're, okay, I don't know what they're going to introduce, but I can just imagine that there will be some unique effects on the cards in similar way that The Walking Dead had stuff. So there's lots of warning signs here for people to be critical of.
I don't really care about the game itself. I'm just keen to see the artwork. I just love seeing new takes on 40K artwork from different designers and different guys. And I think it's always a good time to see a different interpretation of something.
Man, you know it's going to be those 10 Ultramarine captains that Red keeps talking about.
Dang. No, but hey, think if they make, let's take all the characters, let's say from, you know, 8th edition on or whatever, you could, I have no doubt it's out there, you could do that. You could easily have a deck with all 10 plus one Primaris captain, you know, all in there. Well, two Primaris captains now, three once we get Kato. And then you could have RG in there, and you could also throw Ivrain in there with no qualms. So there's nothing preventing it.
That's hilarious.
Just saying.
Had one buddy say, wouldn't it be cool if they did like a secret lair with the Primarchs? You know, like, oh, there's Primarch cards. I mean, yes, that would be cool, but that's probably not going to happen. We're going to get 9 Ultramarines.
Yeah. But so, like, I mean, right now the game is quite well set up to be adapted into something, you know, like whether it should or shouldn't is kind of up for debate. But I mean, like, one mana for a, you know, a 1/1 guardsman, cool. With, I don't know.
Well,
and
oh, I want 40K mana.
But
that'll be cool.
I think we're kind of like, these cards are not going to be in what they call the standard play. So you're like, it's not going to disrupt the casual Magic. This is going to be for collectors, and it's just another collector thing, which I'm really cool with. Like, I want it. As someone who collects both of these things, there's no way I'm not buying this.
Could you imagine Chaos God manas, like green mana Garden of Nurgle? Sorry, I just completely derailed this because I just went on a tangent in my brains. And sorry.
No, but red, I don't
you know,
mind.
In corn, skull, red with, you know, red mana with a skull thrown on it. Yeah. Now we're talking.
Yep,
yeah. I mean, I hope, for, I mean, I want to get these. I want to look at them. I don't, you know, well, I want to tap 2 red and a gold and attack with Dante. That's what I.
Yeah. So red, obviously, with your name, you play what?
I mean,
you'd play blue, yeah? You'd be a blue control deck.
Never, you know, I've never really been a big fan of. I do like. I totally understand the allure of the blue decks and everything. I mean, just watching like someone else's deck go away. Yeah, man. But like, yeah, I mean, and to be fair, I haven't played in a long time. You know what I really liked, which you could probably do now with Tyranids, is I used to like the old Sliver deck, man.
Yeah, I like those tribal combo type stuff. Yeah, it was
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Was it the Cavus as well?
I don't know.
That was definitely a thing, right? But no,
are they
a
tribe?
Yeah, they were.
They were, yeah.
They were typically kind of like the Slivers. They were very much like multi-mana kind of deal.
Mm.
Look, it's elves or nothing.
Oh, man, the green elf decks. One of those, yeah. I mean, vampires are a big deal for a little bit too.
Yeah,
you know, but think of someone else I was talking to about it mentioned, you know, like planeswalker level, like main or legendary character kind of things.
Silent King, know? Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah,
planeswalker.
Exactly.
That's cool.
That would be neat. Yeah. Like, if we get a whole set, that'd be really cool. If it's one or two commander decks or just two versus packs, I'm also
I mean, I don't know if Wizards of the Coast has realized the like the treasure trove they have with this. That I mean, you could make several series as you just keep adding, go running with the factions and stuff. I mean, it could go crazy.
Question for you guys: is it an urban legend or was Warcraft from Blizzard? Did urban legend says that they approached J-Dub to make Warcraft was going to be Warhammer, and it was just going to be a Warhammer RTS, and that they were turned down by GW because they didn't want their stuff adapted at that time. Is that urban legend, or is that did actually happen?
Man, that happened before the internet, so I don't know.
It did, exactly right. So that happened before the internet. Did it actually happen?
Yeah. Look, I don't mind these crossovers, especially when they're just. I mean, you can. It's not a cash grab. It's a collectible thing that people want. So like, no one's compelled. There is a certain amount. This is also another thing to be critical of is the whole fear of missing out. Like, this is a chase set kind of thing. And I mean, look, it's still not bad. This doesn't affect how we play with our plastic toys. So,
nah, not at all.
Yeah. I mean, I happen to want it. I happen to be excited about it, but I can also see the other side, how people would be critical of this from either company.
People who are critical, just, I don't know. I guess I'm not a massive fan of, I don't know if I'm going to wait and see what it is before I buy it, because I don't have a clear understanding of what they're producing right now. But at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and gatekeep like good business plans from an organization I respect.
Yeah,
like,
both things. It'd be like if we got contacted by another organization that we respected to collaborate. Like, why wouldn't we do it?
So, right. Well, you got to give something in credit to GW with, I mean, think of over the last few years, all the different, you know, there's a Necromunda game now. There's a Battlefleet Gothic.
Titanicus is back.
Yeah, their IP, they've allowed, I'm not going to say they farmed their IP out, but I was talking to another good friend about how they've just allowed their IP to go, just run out there. They've been handing out to people. And if it makes money and it works, like, it works. If it doesn't, like, oh, well.
Then you never hear about that mobile game again.
Exactly. And you just keep going. Like, it just doesn't stop. I think it's amazing that we saw this transition, I think, as 7th edition really ramped up at the end there with, you know, the rapid release, the Gathering Storm and everything. Mm. And you really saw the IP just take off in all these different directions. I mean, you know, for a while before that, I'd say Fantasy Flight Games had a lot with the IP, you know, was making a lot of those different board games and everything. But after that, and then where they went from there, I mean, right now, you know, on Steam, like, you can get Gladius or whatever. And it's like a civilization, almost like tactics game of, you know, of the armies from 40K and whatnot. It's just, there's tons of stuff out there it's so for them to do a crossover with Magic, I can't say that I'm not surprised. Maybe surprised it took this long to get to this point, but I'm interested to see where it goes for sure.
Yeah, me too. I'm more keen on it than not, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I definitely want to see it, and if it becomes something, you know, big, then like I'll play. I would play the heck out of a Magic style 40K card game.
How do you guys? So the topic change, if we're ready for it.
Oh yeah.
About the Rus Viking ogre vampire aesthetic?
You talking about from Curse City?
From Curse City. What dartboard did they throw darts at to get that guy? Because he's phenomenal.
Yeah, I want his outfit. Like, can I cosplay as this guy?
Yeah. So yeah, he's a like a Russian or a Rus aesthetic ogre vampire, and I'm just like, wow, that's crazy. I want to hear this guy's backstory. Like, that's the thing you can do with like innovative model design and stuff. You can be like, hey, I actually want to know more about this character. How does he exist? Where does he come from? You know, all that stuff.
It's cool.
Yeah, and you get to crush. Hopefully.
Yeah. Now these have been, I mean, the scenarios that you go through are actually pretty balanced. Like they're not built to completely overwhelm you, but you have to still play through them. And like, I don't know if you played any of the Silver Tower or Blackstone Forge.
I haven't played any Blackstone, but I played a lot of Silver Tower when it came out.
Yeah. I like it. I mean, the style is that it's challenging where you do have to think through it, and it's kind of coordinate with your buddies kind of thing.
Mm.
But I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be the same mechanic or similar mechanic anyway.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And the new swathe of models that came out with it, they're all amazing. I've only got one gripe, if we're allowed to talk about gripes.
Yep.
You are, Adam. You're allowed to.
Me, I am. Oh, thanks, guys. A place of privilege. The only models, I guess, didn't do it for me were the zombies with the tombstones on their heads.
That's a weird... Okay, I felt the same way until on Twitter, somebody pointed out the correlations between the gravestones and the zombies themselves. Like, one of them mm-hmm. is clearly, you know, a loved one or was married or whatever. There's one's, you know, eating something. You know, there's these... it's very narrative, you know, with the way that the tombstone and then the zombie itself. And that makes me like them a little bit more.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying is that because it's a themed little... Every model has a bit of a story. And
there's a story. Each one of those models, yeah, has a story.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get with that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm with you, though. Same thing. I was like, this looks a little clunky, but, you know... Then when someone else did the homework, and I was like, you did some great homework, and I can appreciate them.
I posted up in our little chat, the Facebook chat we have going, when the Monkey Magic guy got announced, they did it. I don't know if this is the jump the shark moment, but I don't know if I called it on this podcast or it was just in a chat pre-recording, but I'm like, guarantee you there's going to be a guy riding a cloud. There'll be a dude
those
riding a cloud who'll
Luminous.
Go blow his two fingers
are amazing.
I'm down. The good ones, the Swordmaster models, beautiful. Very very gorgeous. They're actually the whole aesthetic is beautiful. The twins, yeah, the ones that the one twin's like, yep, balancing on the tip of the other one's armor, they're both gorgeous. Like,
yeah, I wish, yeah, those were absolutely two separate models.
You probably can do that easy enough.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be some nice... There's got to be some significant pin-in point for that toe tip into that point. Otherwise, that is just going to be Mr. Sir Breaks a lot.
I mean, I'm impressed with, like, even the Swordmaster. I know they're not called Swordmasters, but we know, us relics know that they are Swordmasters. For a second, I'm like, those look really similar to Swordmasters. I mean, those look like almost like they just redesigned the Swordmasters for today's age. And then I was like, wait a second, I don't mind.
Yeah. And did you see the ballista?
Yeah.
Do you remember the old ballista? It would just be like a ballista with a dude stand behind it on a square. And there was so much square unfilled, you know? Like, it was just
I mean, you're talking to a Dark Elf player from Fantasy, right? So, like, yeah, I had an army of ballistas supported by some dudes with crossbows.
Yeah.
So it was cool to see the return
Yeah,
I mean, that was a thing.
But how much more fleshed out is that model now? Is the huge, it's a huge quiver. The guy's got a huge quiver of arrows. Like, it's an actual quiver, not like just a rack of spears. He's got a quiver. It's hilarious.
Someone is also, I think, on Twitter or maybe on Instagram, had made a comparison to the freedom that the designers seem to have with Sigmar. Mm. That is, I mean, it seems like they have more freedom than they do on the 40K side.
Well, you think about it, like, what was one of the gifts that G-Dub gave themselves when they kind of remade the game, like, you know, let the old world end. The old world was tied to a lot of tropes: goblins, orcs, chaos, somewhat, yeah,
traditional elves.
Yeah, exactly. It was somewhat tied to tropes, and
Tolkien elves. It was all go. You know.
Yeah, yeah. And now they've let them all go, and they can just do what they want. So they've got a very almost like the last Airbender Oriental mythology feel to the Lumineth Realm Lords.
Oh, I dig it.
I'm really interested to see what the Dark Elf range looks like. Yeah, but I like the breaking. I like the breaking of tropes, like the specific. I know I've mentioned that on this show. You know, instead of having under the ground dwarves, we've got Sky Dwarves, you know, instead of you know, on the sea elves.
Steampunk was hot for a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people still like that aesthetic. And I think that the other side of the dwarves aesthetic with the slayers and everything, the lava slayers was kind of played into as well. And so I think the dwarves really got away with best of both worlds to a certain extent.
And I'm sorry, I wasn't being critical at all. I was praising G-Dub for their willingness to break away from tropes. I think it's an incredible thing.
No, it is. And I agree with that. I knew that they wanted to reinvent what their style of high fantasy was, and that's exactly what they've done. But they're continuing to push it, and these Realm Lords, I think, are an extension of that. Is like it is. They are really showing that they will do whatever they want to do in their own world, kind of thing. Which is, you know, where, you know, look, everything was borrowed from Tolkien in the beginning. Like elves became played characters because of Tolkien. You know, they were no longer just the things that stole your babies in the night or whatever after that. And everything for 100 years was some type of variation of that. And then GW, I mean, courage, dumb luck. I mean, I don't know, right? But tore it all down and are building up something unique to their fantasy world, which is amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that it's got... Well, so right now we have, I guess, the Sigmarites being the kind of envisionment of, so it's very Viking-esque, you know, there's kind of a reinvention of, you know, heroic souls into new forms. It's very Valhalla feeling. It's very Nordic kind of feel to it. Even some of the armor options are quite have a Nordic feel to them. But and now we've got a kind of an Oriental feel with Asian influenced realm lords. There's a lot still to plumb there. Like we also do have the Nordic, of course, there's always the Nordic influenced or the Scandinavian influenced Warriors of Chaos kinds of stuff. I like that they have a counterpoint now too. Really cool. The aesthetic, amazing. Can't get enough of it. In fact, I'm very, very invested in seeing which aesthetics come next and what they choose to use.
I mean, I look at those Realm Lords almost every day. Like, do I need these in my life?
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that now that we've got like what is it called? Is it Rus? Like what I'm defining as that vampire ogre? It's like a Rus influence. Not quite sure what the correct term would be.
I know what you're talking about. I mean, like kind of like the Eastern European type.
Eastern European.
Well, I mean, the whole area that really they're pulling from, because I mean, even you look at the big bad vampire guy that's running it, you know, I mean, it's all that kind of Kislev aesthetic from the fantasy area. And so the thing with the ogre is that it's, you know, so if you ever, I used to have an ogre army, and if you look at the man-eaters, right? So like the man-eaters were the mercenary ogres that kind of wore different attire. And so this guy plays right into it, where he's wearing like armor that I assume he's kind of got along the way, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
because he does have that Rus kind of with the helmet, but at the same time, like you look at his shoulder plate and everything, and of course he's got like the traditional ogre punching fist thing, punching blade, but the shoulder plate he's got still has kind of a more, definitely plays more into this ogre aesthetic, that they're further east, that they're coming almost from like the Mongolian or the Genghis Khan kind of war deal to it.
Like trying to stop an arrow riding on the back of a horse type armor to
it. Yeah. He doesn't have the belly plate, but I think that kind of plays into the man-eater aspect.
We're talking about his shoulder, though. I mean, that's
his huge shoulder deal.
That's a sculpted face. Like that's a demon mask or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's exactly. And all these human characters, like, I don't know what's her face is with the big collar and the staff, but she looks amazing. Like these are just begging to be inquisitorial retinue or stuff.
Oh yeah. No, these are going to be amazing. Some of this stuff. I mean, even the Glaurio Van Alten looks a lot look at that as whether a rogue trader or even a Imperial Guard commander. I mean, some of this stuff is just fantastic across the board. Look at Imelda Braskov, whether that's an Inquisitor or even, I mean...
Which one is that? Is that Big Collar Lady?
Imelda Braskov is the vampire slayer. She's Sigmarite. She's got the like hawk on her shoulder piece. So the griffin. It's probably a griffin given this era.
Yeah.
But she's like holding the sword upright, man. Like that's almost like a Castellan Crow stance from Grey Knights.
Well, a lot of people look at, like, you know, Sisters of Battle, Blessed Blade, Blade of Admonition.
Canon
S, phenomenal sculpt.
True. This is a, like, they're pulling out all the stops. I like it. This is one of those things where the models, I mean, they kind of speak for themselves. So even if you're not a painter, you just want to play the game. You know, this is, you're still going to play, be playing with some really cool pieces. And that goes a long way with the board game.
Hmm.
Even the, I mean, the villains, I know we kind of harshed on the zombies a bit, but go and look for those stories. I mean, like you can see, like one of them is wearing a necklace, and then there's a very similar necklace hanging on the gravestone kind of thing. And there's those type of similarities or links between all of them. It's kind of weird that like the coolest skeletons we've ever seen almost seem like basic in the rest of the kits.
Well, yeah, you don't need much to make a good skelly, do you?
Well, I'm saying these are really amazing skeletons and rat swarms and things like that. Like it's almost going to get lost in these things. But this is cool. And I like the vampires, I think we touched on this a bit, it was when they did that Underworlds thing. Like did the preview of the Underworlds, like the guy, the vamp that looked a little bit on the Strigoi side of things, like was the underfed one, the one that was more ravenous. And we see those types of characters in this as well with the ones like the two female vampires. I think they're female vampires.
Something along those lines.
Yeah. This is going to be amazing. I think so.
But yeah, there's also did you guys ever play Silent Hill?
The video game?
Yeah.
I didn't.
I was like 12 or 13, scared the absolute. Yeah. Yeah. and man, there's quite a, I'm looking at this Gorslav, the gravekeeper. He's got a very triangle
pyramid head
aesthetic going on there. Brings up all sorts of Ghiblis for me.
That is a chaos sorcerer waiting to happen. I mean, I'm telling you, these...
for sure.
Look, get these games, play them, harvest the figures for your personal armies. Yeah.
Well, I think just about every single... Yeah, I think every single Agents of Defiance, every single one of the character models, you could find a reason to play them in 40K. All of them, yeah. Even Qualithus, the Exile, the dark elf, sorry, the Eldar one, or the Wood Elf, would look fantastic as a Harlequin. Look phenomenal as a Harlequin.
Oh, nice. Nice. So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll chat some 40K stuff.
If you like.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, we are back. I still got Adam and Red here.
What up?
Welcome back after that break.
Dark freaking Eldar.
Did we know they're coming up next for sure?
We don't. Like I thought they would have been announced already, but I'm happy they have. I'm happy they have it. I'm not happy for Dark Eldar players that they haven't. But yeah, I'm happy that 40K is getting a break.
I mean, the community's dropped a couple things here or there, right? We've seen they dropped the new Splinter Cannon. They've dropped the Warriors, right? And so they dropped that, but they didn't say anything else. And so,
supply chains have taken a beating over here in the U.S. recently, with everything. And then we had this bizarre weather come through. Normally it hits Georgia, but it hit like everywhere in the South but Georgia.
Hilarious.
So if anybody's out there still struggling with power or weather issues, you'll stay safe out there. Because it was bad for some folks.
Yeah, you meant the Arctic, whatever it was, that went all the way down through Texas, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, it's basically cut a path from Texas to New York with 2 feet of snow or whatever.
Yeah, that's insane.
I mean, a lot of people out there just weren't expecting it. And we've actually, been in Georgia before where we've been hit by, we just weren't prepared. You know, didn't know it was ever going to get that bad. So I feel for folks that had to deal with that. Nope, everything is better.
Yeah, totally.
So anyway, what I'm saying is, like a Death Guard got delayed. There's, been some word about White Dwarf and Pariah Nexus and stuff being delayed. So, we don't know when we're going to see the Dark Eldar, but that's kind of how the Drakari work, don't you? They come out of nowhere when you're least expecting it.
Yeah, I'm super excited for this book. I don't know how you guys feel about Dark Eldar, but they're the favorite army that I don't play. They're my favorite army that I don't play. Makes sense?
Yeah, no,
I don't play them for a couple of very specific reasons. First one being I'm enormously clumsy and don't deserve to have nice things because of it. And I just think I'll take that army to a tournament once and then it'll come home in a shambles and I'll never have I'll be perpetually disappointed in myself and my own thick, clumsy fingers.
Every Raider in Venom multiple times.
Exactly. I would love to own a Tantalus. I can't be responsible for a Tantalus.
Ooh, yeah. It's a pretty solid model, but it's got that sail on it.
If it was plastic, I'd be a lot more confident. The fact that it's resin, I'm just like, oh.
And it's a large model. You have to have you have to be incredibly confident in your display board to want to put that model on it.
But it's so good looking. Like, oh.
It is. And it's actually been, there's been periods of time when it's been very glorious on the table.
It's very good right now.
Yeah, you think so?
It's very, very strong right now. Yeah. I think it's possibly one of their better units.
Because of the open top stuff or what it can do by itself?
Yeah. Open topped, it's got a hellacious amount of firepower. I can bring it up for you guys right now. But the reason, kind of the reason I'm really excited about the Dark Eldar Codex is because I think we've got three very good examples of G-Dub demonstrating that they know how to do slow and smashy armies, like slow and durable armies. I'm wanting to see what their direction is like for writing a 9th edition Codex for something that is fast and deadly. So, you know, my examples, I think me and Reb were talking about this before, off screen. Necrons, a good portion, probably the best portion of Dark Angels and Death Guard are a slow, ponderous, unstoppable force. I want to see how they do liquid, how they do a liquid force, something that's supposed to be quick and agile. I'm really interested to see what they pull out for it. And Red, you said you had some ideas?
Oh, man. So, well, and, you know, we've seen a couple things outside of what was shown by the Warhammer community. There's been a couple leaks here, there. And purely just the, you know, Drazar and we saw some of the weapon loadouts. I don't think that there was anything majorly drastic outside of, we just saw Drazar's stat profile, right? And his weapon. We didn't really see, we didn't really see anything else. We didn't see his rules. So we don't know if he can still fight twice. We don't know if he gives everyone, you know, all the incubi around him plus one to wound or anything. But we do know that he deals 3 damage, and that's huge. That's massive. And I can't remember if he had 4 or 5 attacks, you know, it's in that realm, but I mean, he's going to be strength 6 when you add in his weapon, and it's AP -3 and then it's 3 damage. And so you're talking, I mean, that's a Gravis armor killer to a certain extent.
Well, I was going to mention, you know, with Death Guard, do you think 3 damage is going to be the new chase? Like if you can get it, you just stop everything and do it.
I mean, yeah, I think it's really big because a lot of people are paying premiums for the 2 damage, you know, whether it's Power Fist or whatnot. And I think you saw a shift, especially with the release of Death Guard, that people have just consigned themselves to the 1 damage aspect. And that's where you see a lot of these lightning claws coming out because, I mean, you know, you're only going to do 1 damage anyways. You might as well get the reroll wounds versus Power Fist, for example. And so there's a lot to that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. As for the Tantalus, it's 18 wounds, a toughness 7, 6 attacks, 3 plus armor save, movement 16, auto advances 12. So, you know, every time you want to go fast, you just go 28 inches. It's open topped with 15 models, so 16 models inside being able to shoot out of it. And when it finishes a charge move, you roll a d6 for each enemy unit within engagement range. And on 4 plus, they have a d3 mortal wounds. You've seen the footprint of this thing. Yeah, it's like, it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit wider than a Baneblade, but not quite as long. You can get a lot of things in engagement range. Just like
I think it's as long. And not quite as wide. I think it's the other way around.
Sorry.
I mean, I could be wrong, it's like a shoebox.
Yeah, it's huge.
An elegant shoebox with a sail.
Yeah. It's got 2 pulse disintegrators, which are range 36, assault 6. So you can go 28 inches and still shoot these things if you want. Strength 8, -3, 2 damage. So 12 shots of that profile, which is a very good profile in the game at the moment.
Yeah,
so I just think they're crazy good, man.
What are you putting in it?
Right, like it depends. There's a lot of options. I like a lot of things inside it actually. Like you could just put grotesques in it. They take up the space of 2, so you could have a unit of 8 grotesques or 6 or 7 grotesques and a couple of characters. I like putting a lot of MSU things inside of it, like the idea of pulling like a fleshed out Court of the Archon in there and then just jumping them out all over the table to get your points, score objectives, and then maybe having 1 or 2 like killer units inside it. So the idea would have like 2 5-mans, maybe of incubi, depending on how they rock out, or 1 unit of 9 and Drazar, and then just like a couple of Urghuls, a couple of the Mayans, a couple of Slith or whatever, just to go and do a lot of actions and get a lot of things done. Because first turn, you just move and advance this guy into somebody's face and like, here's your 1 turn.
I will, in my head, probably somebody was thinking the same thing. Did he just say Urghuls and Slith? And you're like, actions. Like, oh yeah, all right, yep, I'm back on board. I'm on.
Action monkeys. They have some of the best. They have some of the best action monkeys you can get for the points. Like
that's
they're
right.
Actually crazy, crazy good value.
Stuff to think about. I mean, it's not a conventional force, right? It's not like what you typically see. It's just not. And so you got to think about some of the things that they can do that are unconventional that they can take advantage of. And exactly it, like, I mean, you're going to waste that time taking out those, you got to hunt down those Urghuls as they do those actions. You know what I mean? You've got to be able to get around whatever piece of terrain that they're slinking through, or
get
whatever.
Around that Tantalus. That's
yeah, whatever. I mean, in my case, you gotta chew through whether it's the 20 grotesques or the 30 incubi or what have you that I want to throw in front of you. I tell you, from when I first started playing them, I really enjoyed, especially with the new aesthetic as it came out. I really enjoy the Raiders. I like the idea of like 10 warriors and Raiders driving around with, I'm interested to see what Splinter Racks do, if there's any changes to that. It's not the best, the most resilient thing or anything, but I think it's kind of funny. I really like the look of it, the whole concept.
No, that's fair. I like it as well. I like the flotilla kind of, mode of warfare. I think it's exciting.
Well, being everywhere with, I mean, decent guns.
Well, we just had a prime example of how Dark Elder can still be playable without a codex in 9th edition. I mean, we had the Las Vegas and Open, and out of nowhere, like a mono Dark Elder army almost went the distance. Hey,
any given Sunday, I guess.
Fuck the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive, really.
Yeah, but they have, you mentioned they got the tools. I mean, they can be different places. There's, there's something to be said for matchups, matchup dependent, and, player skill, of course. We saw that play out almost in a textbook example over the course of that event. But yep. they have a lot of the things, some cheap and mobile units, which to be places to do things. And then, with just a little bit of luck, their guns could make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you hit the nail on the head. They have this ridiculous propensity to just get points, to just continue over a 5-turn game, just keep scoring, just keep getting points, regardless of damage taken or whatnot. And they still have some very good, they still have some very underrated guns in the current environment. I think especially when the splinter cannons and stuff get their shifts. But man, I'm a huge fan of shredders. Huge fan of shredders. I think shredders in the current environment are phenomenal profile.
Yes.
Strength 6, minus 1, rerolls to win against infantry. Amazing.
Yes. Take as many of them as you can.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
I mean, right now, we're speculating on what may come. But, what we're talking about is weapons and stuff that do really well with what you see right now. And, what you see is things with higher wounds or things with damage reductions or, like heavy intercessors are going to be on the table soon. They're no joke.
No, they're not. That toughness 5, 3 wounds.
You want about talking about something that's been delayed? Wow, what a delay on those guys.
Sure.
Well, sure, but but they are. I mean, once they start getting in people's hands, and we know some armies can take advantage of them. Like Death Watch, I think, will want some heavy intercessors. I think there are several marine varieties that could benefit from heavy intercessors. So we're going to see them, and that's a toughness 5, 3 wound model that could easily get a benefit to save.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, man, you're not wrong at all. I've even got a couple of lists in my Battle Scribe with heavy intercessors and Azrael, like just waiting for the heavy intercessors to come out so Azrael can give them a full plus invuln, and we'll see if they're any good. But yeah, interesting how delayed that one has gotten. If it has even been delayed, maybe it's not. Maybe this was always the plan.
Oh, who knows? Well, it's not supposed to be out until, at least coming out in Pride Nexus or whatever pretty soon. But I'm saying that that is a unit that people have, unless they proxied some things up, have not seen them in matched play, organized play events.
It's true. They're an unknown quantity still. That's very, very true.
But, I think it's still leaning towards more. I mean, like, heck, Dark Angel Terminators. They're leaning towards things with high saves and more than 2 wounds. And so what's the best way of dealing with that? Do we think Dark Elder are going to have the tools?
Yeah, look, I think they will. They'll be surgical. I mean, so this is my fear for Dark Elder, is that they'll just seem like either a far better or slightly worse version of Harlequins. And that's kind of what I don't want, but I'm not quite sure what you do to make them stand out.
Well, right now they've got those different modes of play, with the covens and the cults and all that stuff.
Sure. I mean, that's, are the witches going to be enough? Are they in close combat? Are the witches going to be enough to hang with, the average combat?
Blightlord Terminators.
Yeah, exactly. Blightlord Terminators and Deathwing Terminators, Deathwing Knights, right? Like, are you going to be able to go in there and hold your ground? Let's say that it's the point of it is for the witches to have the initiative, right? So if in the best circumstance, if a witch unit charges that kind of unit, are they going to be capable of throwing down to whatever extent? And so, like, there's a lot to weigh out in that. I mean, so looking at this shift in the Venom cannons, or not Venom cannons, but the
Splinter cannons. And
Splinter cannons, excuse me. Thank you. Yeah,
Tyranids is also
right. I know. I made that jump. They do, but yeah, exactly. So, but I mean, you put Splinter cannons across all of your Venoms, and is it appropriate? Like, is that enough? Is it? I mean, against Death Guard, it's really, I don't know. And the next part being is, what do disintegrators look like? You know, when you can put three of those on the heavier platform, trying to remember the Ravager. When you put it on the Ravager and you have three of them, how is that? Because we know what Dark Lances do, according to the leak. Apparently, I mean, strength 8, AP minus 4, 3 damage plus D3. I mean, that's not bad, but
not too bad at all.
It's not, right? That's not bad at all. But what are disintegrators? What do those do? I mean, are they still strength 5, AP minus 2 or 3? I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but I know they were 2 damage, which makes them just not as good because of the Death Guard threat that's out there, and just automatically reducing all that down to 1. It's just not what you want. So, like, if you are they stepped up? Or is there something in the Dark Eldar Codex that allows you to step them up?
To not take us on a tangent, but we talk about these juggernaut units that like just on paper outmatch anything that you might have brought on paper. And right. You know, I'll go back to this a lot, but there are terrain rules that may help you if you know to assign them to some of the things on your table. And then once they're there, take advantage of them, like Defensible.
So there's a couple of exactly right. I would love to see like booby traps become more of a thing, like trapping people in terrain pieces, or having movement shenanigans associated with different terrain things, or becoming entrenched and getting, I don't know, better saves or attributing keywords to terrain. Because I think terrain was the element we all missed the most about 8th edition, like terrain being a significant factor.
Yeah.
And now that it's here, I want it to go to like its full potential.
Baby steps. Well, I don't even know, but I don't even know that it's not. I mean, I think that, you know, this is... I mean, again, as someone who I know, I'm down games of 40K, you know, so when I'm like, now when I play, I'm like so eager to play that I don't know that I go over every piece of terrain and label it and mark it like, you know, we should when we're trying to play for every bit of efficiency. But this Defensible thing, it's like the old time where if you were standing in cover and you were charged, you went first, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is bringing back, that was a tactic that you could do. Like I back in the old days when I would just get absolutely mauled by demonettes. I mean, I played this guy. All he did was roll sixes. So it didn't matter. Like, oh, so you just roll sixes against me. That's what's going on. He would. That's what he would do. All legit.
It's a technique.
That was just what I'm playing Paul. I'm going to be rolling all those sixes. So I would constantly just pick my models up. So what did I do? I learned if I'm playing this guy, I just stand in the middle of the terrain and I don't move until he comes in there.
That's so good.
I at least get to swing. But with things like Defensible, is that you get the hold steady or the set to defend rule. Now, we've seen some things that allow you to circumvent those rules. But if you're as a, for instance, the hold steady, you get to fire your Overwatch and hit on a 5+ instead of a 6+, doubling your odds of hitting. So if you're shooting, that's what you want to do. Mm. And then if you're set to defend, you add 1 to your hit rolls the next fight phase. Yeah. So these right. again, things that even if you are lacking some of that, you know, we talk about Palling Banshees, that how they just need a lot of help. Maybe them adding 1 to their hit rolls might help. I don't know. Certainly better than not doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like the metrics that are being leveraged at the moment is all durability stuff. The speed stuff really needs to come. I don't know. That envelope needs to be pushed.
Yeah.
As in, how fast do you need to be to make up for not being durable?
And that's what you want to see. You want to see how they do it in this edition.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see what their plan is for this edition for armies like that, because there is a lot of armies like that. Part of the Raven Wing stuff. So Raven Guard, Raven Wing. Too many ravens, too many deaths. That's the two words that just plague me. But you know, all the Eldar essentially play to this swift and deadly aesthetic. Tau were part of that aesthetic for quite a while, especially in that little transition period where no one got to play the game, but they got their Psychic Awakening and were very good with like this MSU quick Ghost Keel and Crisis Suit list. As also Tyranids play a very good fast and deadly. We all remember the Kraken Steelers, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yuck.
Yeah, I'm still a little shell shocked from that.
Oh, you didn't deploy exactly perfectly. Oh, sorry, mate, you lost. Yeah, rough.
As someone who has picked up a lot of models in their day, I don't do that every now and then.
Yeah, well, I was playing guard at the time, and I was like, how many guardsmen do I need to give you to let you kill in order to not lose? All of them was the answer.
Yeah, indeed. So, but I was exciting. Actually going to be my counterpoint exciting. To you was the Raven Guard. Is it? It's the same thing you did.
Yeah.
Same. The Raven Wing is that they are, I think, pretty fast and deadly, but they're also, mm-hmm. On the Marine frame, and that's a big difference.
Yeah, they've got a great leverage point for already starting like semi durable.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, an Eldar Guardian is not starting with any durability.
But I like how it's pushed to where they can get places and do things instead of just like there was a, you know, in editions past, there's been a thing where you kind of extend yourself and then you're just kind of hanging out there. Like, it's your Hail Mary play and it has to work because you can't do anything else. Mm-hmm. But now you can be fast and then do something else. Maybe at a penalty, but still get to do it, which is, I think, a step in the right direction. And maybe we see that carry over to mm-hmm. the Drakari.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I think the G-Dub's doing a really great thing at the moment where they're stripping out all the combos and like, do your head in levels of synergy needed to play some of these things at their best. What the units that come to mind are things like Eldar Guardians. I've lost Bane Blades to Eldar Guardians, like from full health to dead from Eldar Guardians.
Mm, I brought down a knight in close combat with three guardians.
that's an aberration.
They only had one wound left, but you know, what do you do? You got to charge in.
Yeah. Well, so these 20 guardians were likely to kill my Bane Blade, and they did, you know? As that like is ridiculous that you could put enough stuff on them that they were likely to do it. That's something that G-Dub is turning away from. They're turning away from gotchas. They're turning away from having like a nauseate level of combos onto a single unit. And they're doing stuff like what we're seeing them do with like Death Guard and Dark Angels. Like you look at a Dark Angels Terminator, yeah? That takes a Storm Shield. It doesn't actually need any other applicable buffs apart from an Apothecary to make it as durable as it's ever going to be, mm-hmm. as ever going to need to be as well. So I would like that I want to see what that looks like for things like Eldar, when you take away all the combos and all the crazy synergies you used to be able to do and just start trying to pack them into their data sheets, so to speak.
Yeah, well, let's cross our fingers for Howling Banshees.
Pull one out for Howling Banshees. Start the Banshees. Striking Scorpions always been my favorite.
No, the Striking Scorpions are cool. Like they are actually my favorite too, because I like Grandris
as well. Across that whole range, you know. Oh. I mean, Striking Scorpions, the Howling Banshees, the new ones look great. Good. Jane Zarr looks good. The Striking Scorpions could use a revamp, right?
Oh, they're still working off those fine cast, but I mean, from when they got turned into, you know, like the what they are now, they had a revision from the metal to the fine cast, and that's, I guess, same with the Banshees, but that's been a while. You're right.
It's been a long while at this point.
Well, does anything from the Dark Eldar range actually need new models apart from the Incubi now? Well, the Incubi had already been done and they're phenomenal, but they still
just has that one sculpt, doesn't it?
Yeah, perfect. It does. They need the perfect sculpt. Yeah, right.
It is cool.
It is. It's not bad, and it's actually pretty easy to mod. But they should have a kit for sure. There should have been a kit for them.
But they're a pretty fleshed out range. I mean, they capture that modern style very well. Like I like the witch kits a lot.
It's easy to say that they're fleshed out range when they took out so many others. You know, they killed all those characters off. Yeah, you only have to, I guess, make as many models as you put in the book. So if you get rid of the models that you had in the book previously, I guess that
I'm telling you, the core, the vehicles, the planes, the homunculi, they all look cool.
They do. They all look good.
Have you guys looked at a Scourge model recently?
All the time, because they're amazing.
Oh,
my God. Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think I ever properly looked at a Scourge model until like last week.
Yeah,
they're some of the best looking models.
Yeah, so I know how good Mandrakes are. Mandrakes are actually one of my favorite sculpts of all time. I don't know why, but they are phenomenally.
The Scourge are they're like a kit basher's dream. They come with lots of cool weapons and neat bits and stuff.
Yeah, I was planning an army with I was writing a list with a mate for a teams event, and we're talking about, you know, the Scourges with the Shredders, which is why I think they're the hottest thing right now. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at the model, I'm like, man, I have never actually given these guys their due. They have possibly the best wings of any model that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
their wings are gorgeous. Even and they've got bat ones and feathered ones, and they're both freaking amazing.
Completely agree with you, and the fact that you can like they really are a a Swiss Army knife. You can kit them out to do whatever you need them to do or want them to do on the table. But as of right now, they don't benefit from all the rules. They're kind of out there on their own island, right? I mean, I could be wrong.
No. That I mean, it's they are, and so that's the problem. Is that I mean, like Incubi, Mandrakes, and Scourges, and a lot of those that it's like there's all these affiliations going around in the Dark Eldar, but there's not a ton of synergy, and it kind of makes it painful because, especially given what GW has, I mean, that there's just not synergy associated with it. And so you'd almost think that they need to be good enough to be standalone models, that they don't require the synergy, because so much of other armies, you know, Space Marines, for example, rely entirely upon that synergy to just min-max all of their effectiveness.
Yeah, too true. And I suppose that's been the issue. They do have to kind of rewrite how Dark Eldar function, because there isn't any internal synergy. Like you just said, like Cabal guys can't benefit Witchcraft guys. You can't benefit any Coven stuff and vice versa, which makes it really awkward to build detachments right now. Hence, they had to give the raiding force thing, the three patrols, and you get all your CP if you take the three patrols, because they had to change that, because it's very counterintuitive. Like, if I told you you have to make a Dark Eldar army and everyone coming to this event, you take whatever army you want, but you can only take a single battalion or brigade. Dark Eldar players would be up in arms being like, that's not how our book works. And they'd be absolutely right.
Well, I don't want to get too far in the realm of speculation, because we just don't know. But I think you know, at the worst comes, we've seen, you know, through things on the internet, like upgrades to weapons, and that's a step in the right direction. And we can kind of even go so far as to speculate what the craft worlds may eventually look like if the Dark Lance, because the Dark Lances and the Bright Lances have always been kind of in parity.
Yep, spot on.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to be excited for these types of things. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of waiting in anticipation to see what does the glass cannon look like in this edition?
And what comes after this? So we've had a cheeky reveal, like, you know, we've been told there's a campaign book coming, yeah? And it's going to have knights, admech, and a couple of other things in it. Is that directly after this? Do we have more codexes in the work? I mean, we're actually in a bit of a dark spot where we actually have no idea what's coming after Dark Eldar. And we actually don't even know when Dark Eldar is dropping, to be honest.
No. I mean, you have to imagine the stuff is coming soon, right? I mean, look, we just kind of be patient. I mean, we were kind of talking about, like, shipping delays and supply chain delays. I mean, this kind of stuff is widespread. I think I don't want to say we're lucky to continue to get the previews that we do. I'm kind of content to just kind of drool over the model picks at this point.
I'm grateful for having what we have. We could have easily GW just been like, all right, shut it all down. Now, we're saving as many pennies as we can.
I'm coming from the haves category over here, because my Blood Angel Codex is I've got a backlog of models to paint. But we probably all share that part.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I've got so much Dark Angels to do, and that codex is phenomenal.
So, okay, so I think this is the question. So we can close the show out with this, is like, what have you changed? What kits did you raid? Did you pull any arms off of anything? Like, what are you doing to get your Dark Angels 9th edition ready?
I got in a trade. I've got something like 26 Black Knights, like semi-built Black Knights. And for like every eighth or ninth of them, I'm cracking off the plasma talent and putting a grenade launcher on it. And that is not a thing I ever thought I'd be doing. But apart from that, I think I am converting a couple of my. Oh, sorry, I need a Samael conversion, which I'm still looking for a source of. And I'm looking at whether I need to convert some of my Nephilim Jetfires into Dark Talons.
Mm. Is that an easy swap? I mean, do you have it set up that way, or are you just going to get brutal with the nose?
I've got all the bits. Essentially, I just need to put So the only difference between the Nephilim and the Dark Talon is that you got a different guns in the front, and you got the missiles instead of the hurricanes, and then you just got a top fin on the top, which I don't think anyone would actually care about if I didn't have the
forget
top
that fin.
Yeah, forget the fin. Especially as like I've got a nice red racing stripe down the middle of my guys, and the fin would make it look awkward. But yeah, that's what I'm looking into at the moment.
All right. I mean, how much?
Also, I had to make a bunch of Lightning Claw Terminators, which I never had any of before. It was all Thunderhammer Storm Shields, Dark Knights, and Shooty Terminators.
Did you already have the bits waiting for this day, gleefully waiting for this day, or did you have to harvest your friends?
No. I've got plenty. Yeah, I didn't have to harvest anything. Well stocked.
I know. We have a condition. The only cure for that is more lightning claws.
It's true.
No, that's good, man. So how long do you think it's going to take you to get ready? Like painted and table ready?
I finished five Termies last night. I finished my Blade Guard. I built and converted five Blade Guard, which I'm so happy with how they came out.
What did you use? Like,
so Push Fit Assault Incessors from Indominus.
Yep.
Mark III Horus Heresy helmets. Power Swords, from the Black Knight kit.
Yep.
Because I had so many of them. Everyone got a super crazy special power sword. And shields from the Deathwing Terminators, from Deathwing Knights.
I picked up a new multi-part kit of the Blade Guard. I couldn't resist.
Do it. Yeah, I still might get one squad. What the idea behind these guys, though, is because they're like relatively new into the Deathwing, they're not trusted that much. So, you know, you don't get any coals, you don't get any robes or whatnot. You're just literally like, you're a geared up assault intercessor. And that's exactly what you're allowed to be for the next like 50 years until you prove your worth.
That's the second level of secrets, is you get your tabard.
You get your tabard.
That dude holding the banner, though, sold me. Like, I could not get this. You know, the guy with the flag over his sword. He's wiping the blood off with.
That's a really good one.
I was like, I gotta have that. I'm looking forward to building up my bits collection of Primaris Marines to do, you know, like we talked about, just be able to go and convert a chaplain or I'm like moments away from creating a Primaris Sanguinary Priest, not because one exists, just because I want to own one. And I've seen some kit bashes recently that look amazing.
It's a very fair call.
Yeah. So I thought certainly there's some bits in here in this Blade Guard kit that he's, but I'm curious to assemble them to see what is spare or partially spare or whatever. It's a good time.
Very good time.
All right. Well, guys, that's going to be our show.
Good times.
Yeah. Good times indeed. I'm genuinely excited for Cursed City. I'm going to get the magic stuff. I mean, let me try to think of a condition. No, I just want it. Like I want to own it. I want to play with them. That's like, what? I don't mind the crossover, but I also respect the fact that some people are like absolute purists and don't like the chocolate and the peanut butter, or the peanut butter and the chocolate.
Sure. That's the thing.
So I can respect it.
Yeah, I respect it. If it's not for you, it's not for you. I just don't think there's ever any excuse to tell someone it's not for them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's happening, but I just think it's something we should be aware of.
Well, this is really, at the core of it, is something that will evoke these types of feelings across the board for this type of product. Because you got people that are very passionate about both sides of it, and then you got some people that don't want to see that mix, and then you got some people that just don't want other people to be happy. And I don't know that I would like, I'm not asking for this, but if it exists, I think I want to be a part of it, but we'll see. You know, we're looking at a news. We haven't even seen any cards. We're just looking at words at this point.
That's what I mean. I'm holding out judgment until I see what's actually produced. Most likely I'm pretty sure just going to pick them up for the artwork, just because I like artwork.
Well, I'll tappity tap, send in Calgar. It's fine with me.
Okay. Is that our lock in? There's definitely going to be a Calgar card.
It's no way it's not Ultramarines. There's no way it's not like mostly Ultramarines.
Yeah.
I expect to see all 10 captains.
All right. Well, folks, thanks for listening. Oh, sorry, you got something, Adam?
There's definitely going to be an Abaddon card as well. There'll be a Calgar, probably a Gilliman, and an Abaddon.
No, there'll be a picture of Abaddon, and it'll just be Chaos Lord under it. I'm kidding. That wouldn't
be backhanded.
No. Hey, I mean, you played 40K Risk, right? Have you played that yet?
Yeah, with War Boss.
No.
Yeah. It goes. I was joking about this earlier. There's Robert Gilliman, Lord of McCrag, Lord Regent of the Empire, of the Imperium, you know, Primarch of the 13th Legion, Master of all mankind, so on and so forth. There's Abaddon the Despoiler, and then there's War Boss, and then there's Farseer, and then there's Space Skeleton, and Bug.
That's amazing.
And Fish.
That's incredible.
That's pretty much how all the names go in Risk.
Yeah, wow.
That won't happen.
I ended on another Ultramarine rant. My bad. Sorry.
It's not going to happen in Magic. Look, I'm completely okay with. We'll see.
Warboss? You're okay with Warboss?
I don't know. It's clearly
a picture of Ghazghal, but they just call him Warboss.
No. I'm not okay with that in Risk. I don't think Magic is going to do that though, because like even their if you were to look at the card game now, like even their commons and uncommons are, you know, there's names
Fair.
And story and narrative in that. Like this, even with the way the sets have evolved, there is that flavor to it that persists. And you can, you know, if you're just collecting a single set, buy into the story of that set. And And so it still exists. And I think they'll exist in all of the things that they do, and especially in 40K. Like, you can't have two juggernauts of the nerd industry who are, you know, high percent lore come together and not make something that's not cool lore wise. Doesn't pass the lore sniff test.
Sure.
But we'll reserve. Like, we've only looked at one news release. Plenty more to come. We eat with our eyes. Remember that. So.
That's right.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thanks for talking with me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Please leave us 5-star reviews, comment. If you're new here, if you just found us, leave some comments. We try to interact with folks best we can. Hit us up on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, so on and so forth. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
See ya.
Make my day.